killers, murderers, decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency?
Welcome to Decoding the Crime Verse, right here next to him. I'm Nolz Healy.
And I'm Danny. You know what? Nolene annoys me because she doesn't have variety in her life.
I like good topics. The weeks that I choose the topics, we have good topics.
I chose Bonnie and Clyde.
The week that Danielle chooses the topics.
No, stop it.
Unless she's got persuasion by our conversations before she chooses the topic. Because when you chose Bonnie and Clyde, we had spoken about it before. We're like, it's so cool. And then your week, you chose it. If you don't have guidance in choosing your topic, we end up with topics like this.
I chose the pirates. That was interesting.
The lady pirate at the end was interesting.
I chose Luciano and Bugsy Siegel.
No, you didn't.
That was my topic.
No, that wasn't your topic.
It was my topic.
I refuse.
I chose Alcatraz. You enjoyed that.
Well, you've run out of topics. Danny, the last few topics have been horrifying.
What?
You made us do funny things.
You made me do a conspiracy about a ship jumping through time.
That was interesting. I know you guys enjoyed that. That could possibly be true. We can't fight people's testimony. This is rubbish.
You know what? Nolene just needs to see a therapist.
You need to see a therapist. We can't keep fighting on every single show about
topics.
Well,
it's not my fault that you're stubborn.
I like a variety of topics, and I honestly am open-minded. Like, if you listen to any one of our shows from the beginning until now, you'll know that I've been open-minded from the beginning.
Open-minded says the person who will not budge about George W. Bush, the Queen.
That's me being open-minded.
Absolutely not. You would not budge no matter how much I ask.
You won't budge either.
Well, I admit that I'm stubborn. I know I'm stubborn.
I'm just saying.
She is stubborn. Anyway,
I closed my mind after Edward Gein. That's what she did to me. Now we're doing Dr. Death.
You know what?
Tell them about this man.
We are dealing with Dr. Harold Shipman.
He looks like
the unassuming man living in the suburb of English town of Hyde, just east of Manchester. No one could have guessed he would go on to be known as Dr. Death. He was convicted of murdering 15 of his patients, but authorities estimate it's more likely he killed between 215 and 260 people between 1971 and 1998, making him Britain's most prolific serial killer. Nolene, you and I started the show because of a conversation we had at a lunch where the rest of the table were very concerned because we were praising serial killers. So you cannot tell me that you now don't find serial killers entertaining.
Serial killers that do serious killings. This guy was injecting people. Old people.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to host this by myself because Nolene is just Nolene.
Go on, because as far as I know, by the time you get to the kills, people will be sleeping. This man's not interesting. Sorry, Mr. T.
So you're not telling them our show is not interesting?
No, this man is very interesting, guys. He killed 216 to 260 people.
Nolene just has no taste.
Not even the Zodiac Killer has killed that many
exactly!
people.
Exactly! And he went under the radar for 20 years.
Wow.
I can't deal with you, honestly. You are infuriating. Absolutely infuriating. Anyway, so let's just look into his background. Harold Frederick Shipman was born on January 14th, 1946 in Nottingham, England, and he was from a modest working class family, and his nickname was Fred. Imagine, my neighbor Fred. Oh, he's a serial killer. Imagine.
He's not a serial killer, this man.
You have to kill three people to be a serial killer. Nolene. He was said to be a very bright child, but also described as a loner. And after a personal tragedy in his life, he was inspired to go into medicine because when he was a teenager, he watched his mother die of lung cancer, and he observed helplessly as she was given injections of diamorphine to ease the pain of the disease. This was later the very drug that he used to murder his own patients. She passed away when he was 17, and the loss profoundly affected him. In 1965, Shipman began his studies at Leeds University Medical School, where he met and started dating Primrose Oxterby. She then became pregnant, and they married soon after that. On November 5th, 1966, they had four children and were seen as a seemingly average, happy family.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Like, let's say you get married, right? Yes. And then, like, you have kids and everything's
and
rosy.
You find out your husband's a serial killer.
Like, would you be happy or would you be mortified?
I'd be mortified, I think.
But we like serial killers.
True, but I don't want to be sleeping next to one.
He won't kill you.
How well, do you
it
know?
It depends. It depends on what type of serial killer it is.
It depends. If he did a bang-up job like the Zodiac or maybe Jack the Ripper, you know those really cool series?
Yeah.
Maybe then I'd
write books after that, I'm telling you.
I'd write books, but I'd also make sure he never gets caught so that I can say, guys, my husband didn't
No,
get
but
caught.
Like these guys don't tell their wives I'm killing people. So you wouldn't
you
know.
You think my husband would be able to hide it from me?
No.
Exactly. Shipman graduated from medical school in 1917 and began working as a junior doctor in West Yorkshire. He secured his first general practitioner position at another medical clinic in the same town, and not long after this, his true colors started to show as my man's was addicted to heroin. Don't do drugs, please. He was also addicted to injectable painkillers. I think that is, I don't understand how you can be addicted to something you have to inject in. I am petrified of needles, so I don't understand the obsession. In 1975, Shipman was caught forging prescription narcotics for his own use, and he was convicted of obtaining opioids through forgery and deception, which resulted in him losing his job and being fined £600 and briefly being checked into a rehab clinic. However, the General Medical Council didn't actually penalize him and actually only wrote him a warning letter. So his later employees didn't actually know this man was
That's
a
sloppy.
Druggie. But can I tell you, like, it is sloppy because I think he would have been caught a lot faster if people knew that this man's was addicted
but
to
But druggie doesn't necessarily mean serial killer.
Yeah, but
at the
if
same
it's
time.
This, if you then notice that that same drug is going missing in big quantities.
Yeah, I
you
guess so.
Make the link.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? At very least, that check into him.
Mm.
Right. So by 1977, Shipman was successfully practicing again as a GP at a medical center in Hyde Park, the town which the majority of his murders took place. However, this doesn't mean he hadn't been killing before, because experts believe he'd been killing ever since he had started his drug addiction, which I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I think he'd been killing a lot more. I think there's a lot more victims that we don't even know about. The first believed victim is Eva Loynes, and she was killed the night before her 71st birthday. By the 1980s, Shipman had become a respected doctor and member of high community, and in 1992, he'd established his own private practice in family medicine. The independence and lack of oversight afforded him the opportunity to commit his crimes. And by this point, he'd already killed around 70 people.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. At the time he was caught, he had over 3,000 registered patients, and his reputation was so solid that many were unable to believe that he was a murderer. However, some people said that he was aggressive, conceited, and arrogant, which I wouldn't be surprised. Most serial killers also have that narcissistic trait. Reportedly, he could be hateful to any person he considered his intellectual inferior. Shipman would make house calls in the majority of the cases of his patients, kill them with a lethal injection of diamorphine, which is the pharmaceutical name for heroin. I actually didn't know that. I learned that while researching.
Yeah.
The nature of the murder meant Shipman watched them die relatively quickly, and he was hiding in plain sight and was known mostly to prey on elderly patients. The victims were frequently older women who lived alone but were in good health, and he were only seeing him for a checkup or a mild affliction. Of his victims, 171 were women and 44 were men. He was also
known... I didn't know he killed men.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like not even half.
Yeah.
I think the men would have been, if he was desperate for that, because I honestly believe he was addicted to killing. Yeah. When he needed to kill and didn't have a female option.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? That's then why I feel did. Like there's so little.
But also men could fight back.
That's also true. But when, I mean, if you don't know what they're injecting you with, you could say, I'm injecting you with whatever, yeah. your daily vitamins. And
unless he's a psycho and he honestly wants to, from the moment he injects you, just go, you die.
Yeah, but then I believe then in the homes, I do believe the victims would have struggled. There was never signs of a struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was also known to target people with terminal illnesses, but would also kill patients that were merely considered annoying. If I had to kill everyone I found annoying, I would have a very long trail. I'm kidding. I'm really kidding. Dame Janet Smith, a high court judge who served as chairperson on his inquiry, said, and I'm gonna quote her, many patients describe Shipman as having a wonderful bedside manner, especially with the elderly. He would make much of them and sometimes tease them gently. They liked it. He made them feel like he was a real friend, yet he would still kill them. Found that worse.
Yeah.
Like, imagine now you think this person is your friend and then they... murder you. He was also known to be blunt and straightforward. For example, when one son asked about his father, he was like, well, I wouldn't bother buying him Easter eggs, like he's gonna die
before Easter, yeah.
And guess what, the man died like 4 days later.
Yeah,
but you see, that was the thing, because he said stuff like that, when the person died, you didn't think anything of it because the doctor had been like, I wouldn't have any hope.
Yeah,
you get what I'm saying? It's honestly quite genius. He had several methods which he managed to hoard massive amounts of dire morphine. Now, obviously, drugs of this nature are highly regulated and controlled. But however, failures of the system and Shipman's own ingenuity, he managed to evade detection for 20 years.
That's crazy.
Now, this is where I find a problem on the medical system, because this is ridiculous, and I'm going to tell you the figures in a moment. In some cases, he would call in false prescriptions, and in other times, he would steal drugs from cancer patients. One investigation found that between 1992 and 1998, he managed to illegally obtain 24,000 milligrams of dimorphine.
That's crazy.
That alone is enough to kill 720 people. Do you see why I'm saying he killed more than we know?
Yeah.
Because where's that rest? Or maybe he was just also...
But he couldn't have used that much.
Yeah, but like, that's a ridiculous amount of...
Because they're saying 216 people.
Yeah, I mean,
and
that's
this is 720.
Exactly.
He couldn't have used the rest.
After a patient was killed, Shipman would usually find a way to persuade the grieving family not to do an autopsy and give some possible explanation for the unexpected death. Dame Janet described that Shipman had become a plausible and accomplished liar, which was a testament to his skill. However, his descriptions of the sudden death were really stupid, and I'm going to give you some. I turned around to get my stethoscope out my bag, and she just collapsed and died. I was telephoning for an ambulance, and she gave one cough, and I turned around, and I could see she was dead. She just died while I was examining her. Who believes that?
Like, just randomly.
I'm sorry. If the doctor gave me that for my loved one's death, I'll be like, you're talking nonsense.
She just turned around 1 second, and then you turned back, yeah, and she was dead.
I was just looking in my bag, and dead on the floor. Painting. Like, what the hell? I'm sorry. It's so stupid. How he got away with this for 20 years, I don't know.
Yeah.
Shipman seemed to have a variety of tactics which he used on the family, which then he kind of gained authority. So when he said this is how they died, they believed him.
Yeah.
He would also convince them to have the body cremated so that any evidence was turned to ash.
Yeah.
Unbelievably, two doctors were actually meant to confirm cause of death before cremation. And in any of the cases, none of that happened. So again, it's failure on the UK's medical system. Yeah, needs to be re-looked at.
That was terrible.
There would be periods of time when the killings would temporarily cease, generally when he was afraid of being caught. And when he came back to, and started killing again, he'd often kill a terminally ill patient not to arouse suspicion.
Yeah.
From 1997, he was on his biggest killing spree, having committed 37 murders in that year alone. From her investigation, Dame Janet hypothesizes that he had become virtually out of control and he was displaying addictive behavior and he needed to kill more in order to fulfill that addiction.
Yeah.
No, he was definitely addicted.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely had an addictive personality, first being addicted to the heroin and then to killing. Yeah. Way to spiral. So how was he caught? I mean, if he was 20 years of being undetected, how did they actually find him? And in 1998, the suspicious high mortality rate of his patients came into question. A nearby clinic actually were like, listen, this man's mortality rate is 10 times greater than ours.
Yeah.
So they reported this to the local coroner, who went to the Manchester police. However, like they do, they failed to do a background check and didn't learn about his criminal record or his medical board history.
But like, what kind of background check did they do?
I don't
know. Did they just like look at his file and go, he's good.
This is when they bought the witches for Agatha Christie. I promise you. And you know what? I don't understand. They asked the local health authority to check patient records, but what Shipman had done, so before, like obviously, like he'd see, let's take an example, he's seeing Susan for about 5 weeks. Mm. During each checkup, he's writing down false ailments in her file,
yeah,
so that when she mysteriously dies, it doesn't look like anything happened.
Yeah.
So when they're checking the reports, they're like, no, but she would have died.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he planned. Mm-hmm. He wasn't... they're fooling around, if I can put it that way. Nothing came up from the investigation, which gave him 3 more months to continue killing, which it said that 3 more murders occurred. While Shipman was never motivated by wealth, it was ironically this fact and his greed that led to his capture. Because on June 24th, 1998, Shipman arrived at the cottage belonging to Kathleen Grundy, the former mayor of Hyde. She was an 84-year-old young woman. I just said a 84-year-old young woman. Great, guys. Who was fit and in excellent health and expecting a routine blood test when she was injected with a lethal dose of painkillers. On her death certificate, he certified that the cause of death was old age and ticked the box for cremation. And however, he lied about another official document. And he said he forged Grundy's will and said that he had left her entire £400,000 estate to him.
After one checkup. Like, what did you do in that checkup that makes me write all my money to you?
Yeah, like, why are we such friends like, that I'm leaving you all my money?
And then...
Grundy's daughter, Angela Woodruff, was a lawyer and immediately knew there was foul play. And that's when she began to look into Shipman's history. And this is when the lies started to come to life. He was also not very good at forgery because he left a fingerprint. And the typewriter he used had like something wrong with its key.
Yeah, a missing key.
And that made it easy for them to track it back to him. So that was dumb.
Yeah.
Woodruff ensured that her mother had been buried and not cremated, and so they exhumed the body for testing, where they found medical-grade heroin in her muscle tissue. Shipman was then arrested in relation to her murder, and over the next 2 months, 11 more victims which hadn't been cremated were dug up, and again, they all came to the same conclusion. They had been murdered.
Dun, dun, dun.
Authorities got access to the computer files at Shipman's medical office and found ample evidence of false entries to support his claims to causes of death. In 2000, Harold Shipman was convicted of forging Kathleen Grundy's will, as well as committing 15 murders taken place between 1995 and 1998. Obviously, we said this is not all his kills. Shipman was sentenced to 15 consecutive life terms without the opportunity of parole. For decades, Shipman never admitted his guilt, nor did he provide evidence of his motives, leaving experts and investigators to theorize senselessly about his killing. Dame Janet said that some evidence shows obviously that he has an addictive personality and possibly got this form of addiction, and also speculated that he had this mentality of playing God, or he got pleasure from watching patients die.
Yeah.
The way in which Shipman was finally apprehended was because he had been sloppy, whereas for decades he had been exceedingly cautious. So yeah. Some people speculate he actually wanted to get caught. And apparently psychiatric experts say this is not uncommon with serial killers. Sometimes when the burden of killing comes too much, they consciously or subconsciously sabotage themselves.
Yeah.
And some other people said, though, they believe that maybe he was afraid of getting caught, so he needed the money to flee. So he was going to take the money and run.
Yeah.
On January 13, 2004, he committed suicide in his cell in Wakefield Prison, and that was the end of Dr. Death.
At least he killed himself as one of his murders.
Can I tell you, though, this is what I think. I think he did definitely have the addictive personality, but I think after losing his mom, he needed a way to rationalize that, and he did that by then killing these people, because it's like, now I can be in control of who lives and who dies. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I feel like it was very traumatic for him to watch his mom die, literally not being able to do something. And the fact he's using the same drug, I mean, there's definitely a connection to his mom's death.
I think also he wanted to keep reliving it to maybe do it correctly. Because when someone dies, you often feel like, oh my gosh, yeah, there's something more I could have done, said, whatever.
Yeah, like, so this is his way of being like, oh my goodness, I didn't have control then, but yeah, I have control now.
What's very disappointing for me about this case, besides the case that the case is disappointing, if you get what I'm saying, is the fact that he's only convicted of 15, and we've seen this very often, where they're like, he killed 680, people, yeah, but
the problem was, the problem was they were only able to exhume, if you count Grundy, 12
yeah,
bodies.
Yeah.
With what are you gonna? You can't actually say who he murdered, yeah, and who he didn't murder. So it sucks because those, however many hundreds, don't get their justice.
Yeah.
But I also do feel like before he was killing patients in his home, I wouldn't be surprised if he was killing other people.
Yeah.
Because this is an addiction. I think started. I think he snapped the day his mom died.
Yeah.
So I don't think he would have waited till he was qualified. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. I feel like there's a lot more to the story, which is really sad.
Yeah.
But I suppose we will never know, because we can never actually know all his victims.
Yeah.
But that is all for this week, and we will see you next time.
Until then, we'll have better topics.
Oh my goodness.
No mourners.
No funerals.
Join the Active FM show? Well then catch us on Instagram at ActiveFM777, Twitter and Gab at ActiveFM, Facebook at ActiveFM/777, as well as YouTube at ActiveFM, and our website at www.activefm.co.za. Don't stop, don't hesitate, find, follow and enjoy us on all our different platforms. You don't want to miss out.